There's a new shelter project for the homeless in Delaware. Welcome to DeMarva Today. This is Don Rush. On any given day last year, there were over 1,100 who could be found to be homeless in the first state. To make a dent in that population, there is a proposal for two temporary shelter villages for the towns of Lewis and Georgetown in Sussex County. Projects are the creation of Springboard Collaborative, and they are aimed at providing a space for the homeless to begin a transition to life off the streets. Judson Malone is the executive director of the organization. We have him on the phone this morning. Welcome to the program. So tell me then a little bit about this project.
Okay, the basic concept is that, you know, to get people out of the woods and unsheltered, you know, traumatic life, we are partnered with a company called Pallet Inc. in Everett, Washington. And they make modular, quickly assembled sleeping units. They come in two versions, 64 square feet and 100 square feet. They have a lockable door. They have heat. They have air conditioning. They meet all the fire and safety codes. And they have, bunks where, one or two people can sleep comfortably. And they can be put up in a matter of hours. So they do not have, like showers and kitchens. They're not houses. They're sleeping units. And to support a village of these type of shelters, we would support them with laundry facilities and bathroom facilities and supportive services, to provide meals, to provide case management, to provide referrals to the services that they need. And the idea is that these people coming from an unsheltered life need time to adjust and get stabilized, but once they do, we want to couple them with case managers that will get them connected to the services they need, be it addiction or behavioral health services or mental health services, and so that they can begin to plan for their future and develop a plan to move on to a permanent housing situation.
How many units then do you expect in an individual community?
Yes, the optimal number is 32 for a couple of reasons. 30 to 32 shelter units, and depending on how many people want to stay by themselves and how many people have partners. We're expecting in Georgetown, potential population of about 40 people. That gives you a chance for them to build a kind of a sense of community without so many people that they fall into factions. So that's one point. The other point is that 32 of these happens to be the optimal number that will ship on a truckload. And the reason the company is called Pallet is these panelized units are fitted onto pallets, and those pallets then go into a truck, and so they can hold a maximum of 32 shelters.
In terms of the people who would be there, are we talking about families? Are we talking about men, women, individuals? What vision do you have for that?
It just so happens that we are planning two projects in the county. One is in Lewis at Connolly's Church. They have a marvelous what's called an enclave, a kind of a U-shaped, a tree-lined area on their property that we plan to put some shelters for families. Now, in the case of families, we're talking 100 square foot shelter units, and those come like 16 to a truck load. And so it just so happens that's about the right number that would fit into that area. And so a recent study showed that family homelessness is the largest rising population of homelessness in the state. And for example, Indian River School District has 114 homeless children in the system. Cape Henlopen has like 104. There we are targeting, those tend to be mostly single parents with one or two children. So we'll have a set of supportive services specifically designed for that population. In Georgetown, we have an ongoing problem with encampments in the woods, and it's become increasingly in a crisis. Just a few days ago, a gentleman was sleeping in a tent in the woods and it caught fire. He got burns over 60% of his body. He's currently in a burn clinic in Philadelphia. I hope he's doing okay. I hope he's going to get survive it. But so the population that we are intending to house in Georgetown are very likely going to have issues with addiction, with mental health. They're going to need extensive services, which we intend to provide. But the first step is to get them into a safe, secure place where they can get restorative sleep. They can begin to get over the trauma they've been living for perhaps years. And then slowly we can begin to connect them with the support services, you know, that they need. You know, it's always their choice. We respect the personal autonomy of each person, but we have to create a condition where they can get over trauma, so that they can begin to connect to those services and stay connected to those services.
In terms of men and women, how do you deal with separating them or dealing with their particular issues?
Well, to begin with, each person, man or woman, will have their own individual lockable sleeping unit. Men and women currently are in the same encampments in the woods with no security, no protection, against assault or other misbehavior or criminal behavior. But here we're going to have security. We're going to have each person, can be very comfortable at night. Their belongings are safe. They are safe. The door is locked. And then during the day when they move about, we will have a code of conduct that strictly enforces that you cannot do any harm to yourself or to others. You cannot have drugs or alcohol on premise. There will be, an entry point where people are checked in to be sure that they are not in possession of, drugs or paraphernalia. We're not insisting that they be sober. We're not insisting that they be free of addictions. But we are insisting that they be functional and behave accordingly and do not use while you're in the shelter.
Are these shelters then seen as a temporary situation? And if so, is there a time limit for people staying at these?
There's not a time limit. There are quite a lot of the shelters do have time limits. You can stay here for 30 days, or you can stay here for 60 days. What we do is we try to focus on helping them develop a housing plan, helping them get past the trauma, helping them start to think about their future, and then also help them find housing. But we don't time limit it. The Pallet company has over, by this count, about 50 of these Pallet villages across the country. And their experience that no one has stayed in a Pallet shelter for more than a year, and the average is from 3 to 6 months. And about 60% of them succeed and stay in permanent housing when they leave. So we're drawing from that experience. This is not us inventing a new concept. This is a proven concept that we're partnering with that's been demonstrated across the country.
Now, you say, of course, you're going to have some staff to help people and so on. What about those people who just simply can't seem to get it together in order to move beyond that perhaps some of them may very well prefer to be out and homeless, as it were? I mean, what about that situation?
Well, there's always this comment that, people prefer to be homeless, and there's an element of truth to it. What it usually speaks to is they don't want to go in a shelter when they're separated from their spouse or partner. They don't want to go to a shelter where they have rigid rules, and that they are required to be drug-free. They are required to be free of substance abuse. In other words, too many of the shelters create barriers that they just can't deal with, and that's why they stay in the woods. Our model is what's called a low-barrier shelter, not no barrier, but low barrier. So we're not insisting that you go to a sober house and be clean before you can come to the shelter. Well, we're only insisting that you don't use on-site and that you respect others and behave in a functional way. And so there may be some who still don't want to come out of the woods. But the experience of being across the country is the thing they want most. If they're living in the woods, the thing they want most is their own personal place to be housed with a sense of autonomy and control over their life. And that's what we're trying to offer.
How significant is family outside of these housing projects? How important are they to, say, someone being able to get on their feet and reconnect with the rest of the world, to get out of one of these shelters, as you would say, and get on with their lives? How important do you think that is?
It is the mission. It is the crucial mission. We want to provide every opportunity for people to, come out of that deep well of homelessness that they fell into and can't climb out of by themselves. And we want to provide them the ladder to climb out. And then a lot of times the housing that they need is basically starts with reconnecting with their family. Many families, the pain and agony of family members who see someone, one of their niece, their uncle, their father, just dive into this desperate fit of homelessness where there's just no way to connect with them, or if they bring them into their home, they're ill-equipped, they can't provide the support that they need, so their household gets wrecked because this person comes in just doesn't know how to function. So we provide that. Our goal is to provide that support structure to get them stabilized. And at that point, then there's all kinds of possibilities that open up. The thing they need most is hope. And that's what we try to provide.
One of the things that struck me about homelessness, particularly if you've been out there for a long time, and people tell me this, that who've been out there, is that there's a certain psychological impact in which they become numb to the outside. Get into certain particular habits, not necessarily bad, but particular habits. And it is a really numbing experience, that is homelessness. I mean, how does one then try to then pull them back out of it, given the kind of impact that might have on somebody, particularly somebody who's been out there for a long time?
Well, you're exactly right that day after day, they lose all sense of connection to the rest of society. They become numb. They become traumatized. The experience that we've observed in these pallet shelter villages, that the single biggest thing that happens to them at the beginning is a bed behind the door they can lock and a space they can have control over and call their own. Restorative sleep is the first step, and it builds from there.
In terms of interaction then between the various people who live in this little complex, how important is that, and how does that work in terms of people getting along? Obviously, some people may not get along, as it were, but how important is that interaction in terms of with other people?
It's very important. It's very important that this community of people living in these shelters do begin to socialize, and they probably already known each other in the tents in the woods, but there's a dynamic that happens there that isn't always healthy. When they come into a more structured environment where they have personal safety, and they have case management, and they know that there are expectations of their behavior, then they can begin to relate to one another in a less hostile way and become, more connected. And there's different connections that we strive to create. One is, peer support. Recognize that everyone's at a different point in their journey. Some are deeply traumatized. Some are halfway out of that. And some have been through it and can turn back and help others. So we want to foster those kinds of relationships, but we also want to reconnect them with the larger community. So we'll be looking for volunteers and organizations to come in and do cookouts, to have events, do things that are fun, and get them reconnected, with the larger community.
In terms of staffing, what kind of staff do you expect to have? I mean, how many? What kind of skills do you think that they should have? And what kind of skills do you think they will be able to impart, for instance, to the people who are living there?
Okay. Well, first of all, we have to manage the village itself. We have to make sure the maintenance is done, the sanitation is done. Very importantly, we have to make sure that a very aggressive program of sanitation is done to prevent COVID. We have to make sure that supplies are ordered. We have to make sure meals are delivered. So we'll have a program manager that's, basically responsible for the smooth operation, safe operation of the village, to make sure that the security people are there when they're supposed to be and so forth. Secondly, we will have caseworkers. And right now, given a potential population of 40 people in Georgetown, we would expect to have probably 2 caseworkers, and their job is to get to know them, to earn their trust, to help them start thinking about a housing plan for the future. But even before that, to help them get connected to the mainstream services that they may need. Do you need counseling? Do you need medical attention? We're trying to establish some very formal relationships with organizations like LORED, the State Service Centers, Bridge Clinic, the ACE Resource Center, and other organizations, First Aid Community Action Agency, so that they can get to those services when they need them. And it's the case manager that makes those connections happen and gets to know each individual and understand their basic needs. So that's a very important role. The other role is what we're calling safety monitors in combination with hired security. And their job is to make sure that when people come into the, when they leave, they go about their business, and then when they come back, they have to, present all their belongings for inspection, to make sure that there are no weapons, there's no drugs, no alcohol, and that has to be done every time they come in. And so the safety monitors are responsible for that.
Will there be some special provisions also then in terms of staffing and handling of the residents in terms of the children? Is there going to be something special? Will there be any learning going on? Yeah. What's going on with that?
And obviously in Georgetown there will not be, because that one's only going to be for adults. But in Connolly's, there definitely will be provisions for child needs and child care, and supporting. For example, the parent needs to go for a job interview or has a job. We have to make sure that there's provisions that there's if they're preschool, that there's child care. So we'll have to develop a program of support for that as well.
Now, you mentioned a moment ago COVID. What about vaccinations, testing, that kind of thing for obviously COVID itself? But then obviously we have other issues and other viruses and diseases, but particularly COVID. Is everyone going to be required to be vaccinated, or what's your policy on that?
No, it's pretty much the state policy that vaccines are not mandatory, but we will make every effort to encourage. If there's a misunderstanding about what the vaccines are, we want to educate them. But we definitely want to screen them every day, take their temperature every time they come back into the village. And as I said earlier, we want to enforce sanitation, both in the individual sleeping units, but especially in the bathroom facilities where they'll be used by everybody every day. So it's a combination of screening, sanitation, and masking and social distancing.
By the way,
encouragement in every way we can, if they have not been vaccinated, to go ahead and get vaccinated. We'll have vaccination clinics on site.
Will there be some kind of medical staff, by the way, on site, just generally, or how are you going to handle that?
No, there won't be medical on site permanently, but there will be key medical personnel frequently on site with their own office space. but not as a permanent part of the organization.
So in terms of the locations, obviously some neighbors, some people find themselves uncomfortable with neighbors who are homeless or who are maybe going through that transition. What about the communities that are going to be surrounding these, and how comfortable do you expect them to be?
Well, we're finding that overall there is more of a favorable opinion of doing something. Now, I'm speaking now about the Conley's church property.
Right.
They set on a very big piece of property, largely open, but with a very, you know, tall tree-lined area where the enclave, where the children, the family shelters will be. And most of the housing is upwards of three-quarters of a mile away. But they tend to be in subdivisions, and there are a lot of subdivisions being built, you know, pretty rapidly in the area. As I said earlier, though, we will not allow our participants in the program to just freely walk about and you know, be seen or on the side of the road walking here or there. What we will do is provide them transportation to jobs, medical appointments, and other things they need. So most people, not a huge majority, but a lot, understand the gravity of the rising homeless population. They understand the rising issue with children who don't have housing. There are some, however, who are beside themselves with the whole idea. We just have to let them, we have to hear them out. A lot of times they are very anxious about what they perceive when the perception is not true. So we have to continually try to put the correct information out there. Most of the things that they're concerned about are just not going to happen because we have a plan to address it. And it takes time. People have to, you know, take the time to say what they want to say. We're not trying to rush this project through and, you know, jam it down their throats. But we do want to talk it out, and we want to get the right information in front of everybody. But overall, it's been pretty good community acceptance. The situation in Georgetown is a little different because it's very evident, it's becoming more and more evident to everybody in Georgetown that the encampments are harming business. They're unsafe. They obviously feel badly for the people living in the woods. And so the idea that there's this other alternative to give them some relief, I think, is perceived a little differently in Georgetown. But we are going to have a series of public hearings before we start the project.
Now, and by the way, in terms of Georgetown, your wife, I guess, is a councilwoman there. And I was kind of curious about the reaction of the local governments, both obviously in Georgetown, obviously Lewis, but Georgetown in particular, is given its unique situation, as you mentioned a moment ago.
The reason that we're able to start to develop this project is because the town council passed a resolution that created this as a pilot project. They basically waived the zoning requirements and created, you know, some requirements, but initially allowed us to develop a plan to do this project, and it was voted unanimously in favor of creating this pilot project. It's a two-year project with options to renew two more years after that. It's a bold statement from the town. It's a recognition that there's need. And before the town voted on that resolution, led by our former chief of police, R.L. Hughes, he just retired, he led a work group of nonprofits and state agencies in a series of town hall meetings. We met like twice a month for 3 months, and we really just got into this issue and tried to understand the homeless situation, tried to understand, you know, we can't just keep, as Captain Holm, currently serving as the acting chief of police, as he said, you know, we tried being the bad guy. You know, we tried gently asking them to leave. We tried, you know, arresting them, but let's face it, they're not going to stay in jail for trespassing. So we realized that we had to become the good guys, and we had to become, you know, offer support. There had to be a different way to approach this. And so when we Springboard presented our plan, it fit. It's the solution that was needed. The only thing that we're not able to do, and it is a desperate situation, we're not going to be able to get this project open before cold weather. It just takes a little bit longer than that. We hope it will be open in May. But in the meantime, we are really looking for, you know, code purple type shelter. There's a little bit of it in town, but not enough. And so we really have got to try to figure out a way to get these people through the winter.
One other group I needed to ask you about then, of course, is the Hispanic community. Is there a significant number of homeless Hispanics, or and if so, how do you deal with that population? Because they have both, obviously, language issues, but obviously some may very well have immigration issues.
Well, there are some homeless Hispanics in Georgetown, but not very many. In that culture, they don't have a problem with multiple families living in single households or multiple individuals. So on the one hand, it keeps them from being on the street and homeless. On the other hand, we are trying to figure a way to deal with the overcrowding issue. But the fact is, though, that that population, we will address the needs of any individual Hispanic homeless that we come across. We are not concerned about their documentation or degree of documentation. We're just concerned about making sure that they're safe and can get services. But as I said, though, Hispanics are much more cohesive, you know, across distant family and across even friends of friends that need a place to stay.
So how did you personally become involved in this idea of trying to do something about homelessness?
Well, I'm retired, but I've worked for a number of years, both as a volunteer and as a consultant in the area of sustainable development, smart growth. When I eventually moved to Georgetown in 2016, I got involved in one of our Hispanic neighborhoods and worked with Habitat and First State and La Esperanza and other organizations. And we created a plan and successfully got a grant, or Habitat got a grant, to build affordable housing in that neighborhood. And that project is ongoing as we speak. So I basically have gotten to know a lot about, you know, the different organizations in town. Through all these connections, I was introduced to someone who lives in Hocanson, Jeff Ronald and his wife, Christine. They are both professionals, primarily in the medical field. We started this collaboration a year and a half ago, and, you know, through a lot of research, a lot of study, we started developing the tiny home communities concept that you looked at. We got to know the people at Pallet in Everett, Washington, and, you know, started following the work that they were doing. And so that's kind of how we got started. And so that's kind of who we are and where we came from and where we're headed.
Judson Malone is executive director of Springboard Collaborative, which aims to create two villages to shelter the homeless. We appreciate you coming on the program. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.